Let's cultivate our motivation. And really put our mind towards the big view, towards thinking about something beyond our own immediate pleasure and convenience. And especially directing the mind to future lives, to the possibility of attaining liberation from all suffering, and especially attaining full enlightenment, where we not only free ourselves from cyclic existence, but also have all the ability to be of the greatest benefit to other living beings as well, and to guide them out of cyclic existence. And so with that big picture in mind, let's listen to the teachings today as part of going on that path towards that noble goal. In the last sharing the Dharma Day, we talked about taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, which means really making a choice about what spiritual path and spiritual tradition we're going to follow, and then making a commitment to that. And when we take refuge, we also have, in the formal ceremony, when we take refuge, then there's also the opportunity to take precepts. So then the topic of precepts comes next. So in the book that we're following for the series of sharing the Dharma days, the previous chapter, we hear you. Okay, the previous chapter was called Practical Guidelines for Good Living. That was on page 59. And this next chapter, which we're going to cover today, is called Precepts, Directing our Energy Positively. And that's on page 69. So, in discussing the topic of precepts, we have to understand that there's different kinds of vows. Now, when I'm using the word vow here, I'm not talking about the individual precepts. You know, the precepts are like do not kill and so forth. The vow is the type of ordination it is. Okay? So there's three broad types of vows. The individual liberation or pratimoksha vows, the bodhisattva vow, and the tantric vow. Within the individual liberation vow, there are eight different kinds of vows. Okay, so you have the fully ordained monk and nun, the novice monk and nun, then there's a probationary nun, then there's the male and female layperson with the five precepts, and then there's the one-day precepts. Okay, so those are the eight types of individual liberation vow. Yeah, the bodhisattva vow is a different kind of ordination altogether, and so is the tantric vow. Okay? Let's start with the individual liberation vow, with those eight kinds that I just mentioned. When we start the Dharma, after we take refuge, then many people choose to take some or all of the lay vows. In Sanskrit, the term is upasaka for men, upasika for women. And so there are five precepts in that vow. Okay, so to avoid killing, stealing, unwise sexual behavior, lying, and taking intoxicants. Okay? And so people can take some or all of those, and those form the real kind of backbone framework of Buddhist ethical conduct. Yeah, if we don't stop those five, we're going to have a really hard time doing anything else, including gaining some realizations, because those five stop us from the very, very gross negative actions that create negative karma, that bring suffering and bring in obstacles to our path. And also that when we create, when we act in a harmful way, there's a lot of confusion that comes in our mind, and often guilt and regret. And when we suffer from a lot of guilt, that also becomes an obstacle in our spiritual practice, doesn't it? Yeah, you sit down to meditate and all you do is feel guilty and, you know, can't concentrate on anything else. That's a hindrance. Okay? So by stopping these negative actions, by keeping these five precepts, you know, we prevent the guilt from arising, because we don't do the actions that cause it. We also stop the bad habits, you know, habitual actions that we may have, such as lying or cheating and things like this. We stop creating the full destructive karmic actions that lead to lower rebirth and lead us to experience difficulties even when we're born as human beings. We stop creating the karma that creates the result for that in terms of the environment we live in, and living in a place with a lot of war, disease, or whatever. Okay? So when we take those five precepts, it's really very much to our advantage. And the five precepts were described by the Buddha as wise ways to live. Okay? So the Buddha, in talking about these things, he didn't say, thou shalt not do X, Y, and Z. It isn't like that. The Buddha just saw that when you do certain actions, you get certain results. Or when you experience misery, it's because of certain actions. So if you stop those actions, you stop creating the cause for the result, misery. Mm-hmm. And so in giving us the five precepts and the option to take that, he's giving us the option to stop ourselves from creating the cause for difficulties. Okay? And then, of course, it's our decision, our choice, whether we take the vow and keep the precepts. Okay? But that's the level that we start with. Yeah. Then, as a lay person, okay, let's say you've taken all five, and some people may start with one or two, but eventually they get to all five. In addition to keeping some or all of those basic five precepts, then once in a while, as a lay practitioner, you may want to do things in a very strict way. And so there's another kind of vow you can take that's called the one-day vow. And the tradition of this vow happened because at the time of the Buddha, the monastics would recite their precepts on the full and new moon days, and the lay people wanted to do something special on those days as well. So the Buddha said, well, you can come to the temple or not come to the temple, it's up to you, and take the eight precepts for the period of one day. And in that case, you have the regular five, but for one day you keep celibacy, and then you add on three other precepts that are, you know, make your mind tending a little bit more towards monastic life, but it's only for one day. And so those are to not sit on high beds and seats, to not wear ornaments and perfumes and jewelry and cosmetics and things like that, and to not eat food after midday. Okay? And so then you can take that vow for one day, and you accumulate kind of extra merit for that one day, and then at the end of one day, then you just go back to your however many of the lay precepts you have. Okay? Then, some people want to become monastics, when they become monastics, they take the novice ordination. And that is just like the eight vows, the eight precepts in the one-day ordination, with two more, which is that the one about music, dancing, cosmetics, actually I forgot that, the one about perfume, ornaments, and these things went with music, dancing, and singing, okay, in the eight precepts. That's divided into two in the ten precepts. And then you add on the tenth one, which is not handling money or gold or silver. Okay? And so that's how you get the ten. Now here at the Abbey, what we do is people take the eight precepts, but they take them not just for, if they're planning to like explore the possibility of becoming ordained, then they take the eight precepts for a longer period of time, usually for life, or they, although they may want to try for a year or something like that, they decide. And then after that, if they, and they put on gray, that's what Dana says, and then they can decide during that period if they want to go further and take one of the monastic vows. So if they do, then they go up to the novice vow, which is Shramanera for men, Shramanerika for women, and that has the ten precepts. And at that point, you put on robes. Okay? Some other teachers do it differently, where after the eight precepts, you can put on robes, or they give something else called Rabjong, which is, you know, I won't talk about right now, but, and they let people put on robes. Okay, so different. There's some kind of variation there according to the teacher or the student. But this is how we do things at the Abbey. Okay? Then, at the Abbey, we have everybody stay, you know, as a novice for 2 years. For the men, that isn't required for them. For the women, they take an additional six trainings, which is called the Shikshamana ordination. And so they keep that for 2 years. But to make it gender equal, we're having both the men and women at the Abbey keep the novice ordination for 2 years. And I think that that's a very good way to really get used to being a monastic without having so many precepts. The idea of being a novice is that you want to train in the full precepts, but you haven't taken them yet. Yeah, so it gives you some space and leeway here, you know, to train without feeling like, oh, I have them. Yeah. Then after that 2 year period, then you take the full precepts. Okay, so bhikshu for men, bhikshuni for women. Yeah. Okay, so that's the covers the eight self-liberation precepts. Now, there's a lot of talk about bhikshuni ordination these days because it does not exist in all the different Buddhist traditions. When the Buddha first taught the Vinaya, which is the monastic code, he just taught the Vinaya. There weren't different Vinaya traditions. But as Buddhism spread to different parts of India, they didn't have modern communication. They didn't have modern transportation. And so different traditions started to develop. Yeah. And considering that the Vinaya tradition was passed down orally for about 500 years before it was written down, the Vinaya traditions of these various groups are remarkably similar. Yeah. You know when we played the game telephone when we were kids and how garbled the message was at the end of just 10 people? Well, this was passed down for 500 years and they're very close to each other. Okay. But still, there developed 18 different initial schools. Yeah, only three of them are existent today. Yeah, the other 15 kind of faded out in history. So the Theravada Vinaya school is practiced in Thailand, Sri Lanka, parts of Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, you know, and then also in the West. And then the Dharmagupta Vinaya is practiced mostly in China, Taiwan, Korea, Vietnam, also in the West. And the Lila Srivastavada Vinaya is practiced in Tibet and Mongolia. You want me to say those names again? Theravada. Okay, Theravada. Dharmaguptaka, Dharma Guptaka. Then Mula Srivastavada. Mula, MULSRAVASTA. Mula Srivastavada. Does that look like it when you write it down? I'm just kind of... When I type it, I have my autocorrect, you know, MSV. I type that and it spells the whole thing, you know. Yeah. So, okay, so you have those three Vinaya traditions. The full ordination for women is only available in right now in the Dharmaguptaka, the Chinese tradition, Chinese, Korean, Vietnam, because all these traditions depend on the ordination having been given from teacher to disciple to their disciple and their disciple. And sometimes in history, things get interrupted. Yeah, they get interrupted by warfare. And so there's no ordinations for a generation. Or in the case of Buddhism going to Tibet, they just brought monks to give the precepts. They didn't bring nuns, I think, because it was kind of hard to go over the Himalayas. Yeah, and it was hard for Tibetan women, considering the bandits and everything, you know, to go from Tibet to India to get the ordination and then back to Tibet. So they, in the Tibetan tradition, they've only had the Bhikshu ordination all along. In the Theravada tradition, they used to have the one for both fully ordained men and women. But in Sri Lanka, there was a war, I think it was in the 11th century, and both the Bhikshu and Bhikshuni lineages were broken. So they went to Thailand, who had Bhikshus, but not Bhikshunis, and brought back, or was it Burma? Maybe it was Burma, one of the two, and brought back the ordination from there, but they could only bring back the ordination for men because that's all they had. Okay. So nowadays, there's a big movement to reinstate these ordination lineages in both the Theravada tradition and the Tibetan tradition. And so there's a lot of discussion going on about it. What we have decided to do at the Abbey is His Holiness gave permission for individuals to go to Taiwan and take the Bhikshuni ordination from the Dharmaguptaka tradition there. So it's not the Tibetan, the Vinaya followed in the Tibetan tradition. So that's what I did in 1986 to take the full ordination. And so the whole Abbey is going to follow that Vinaya lineage because it has both men and women. And then we don't need to worry about all the discussion that the Tibetans are having. Okay? So it makes it very easy for us. And then after we have the requisite number of fully ordained men and women who have been ordained for 10 years in the case of men, 12 in the case of women, then we can give the ordination here ourselves, which would be very nice without people having to go to Asia to take it. Right now we can give the ordinations for women. We have some, the novice and shikshamana, the training ordination for women, because there's some nuns who have come over from Seattle to help us do that. And then one of their masters came over to give Venerable Jampel his ordination, and some monks from, Chinese monks from Portland and Seattle came for that. Okay. Okay. But one day the abbey will have its own homegrown, yeah, monastics, and then we can do it here, which would be very, very nice, once that happens. Okay. So just to check with you, we've gotten just as far as the Vinaya lineages. Do you have any questions so far before I go on to the other kind, the other two vows? Yeah.
I have a question about a lay person taking the eight for their life. Is that existent, and do people do that?
Oh yes. Yeah. Oh yes.
Without becoming an anagarch.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And would that be Mahayana?
No, that's still considered a Vinaya one.
Okay.
What we sometimes do in our tradition is take the eight Mahayana precepts for life. So that's Mahayana, and that's because it's done with a different motivation. Okay, so it has a different result, and there's a few small details that are different in it. Okay? Because, see, usually the monastics, you're not allowed to take a lower vow because you already have the full ordination. But the eight Mahayana precepts we are allowed to take because that's done with the bodhicitta motivation. Whereas the eight vows, types of vow for the individual liberation vows, those are taken with the motivation to attain liberation from cyclic existence. Okay? It sounds complicated at first, but it's not once you get used to the terms and remember, and then you just see if it, you know, you can get it all at once. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some years ago at Cloud Mountain, we were taking eight precepts, and one of the visiting nuns there used a phrase that I have quoted from, but I wanted to see if this is really accurate. She said that the Buddha gave the eight one-day vows so that lay people could have the opportunity to be like monastics for that 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Is that an accurate way of saying that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because they don't have the 10 precepts of a novice, mm-hmm. but they have 8, mm-hmm. and it's more towards, you know, doing that. But, you know, and some lay people like to think that they're becoming more like monastics, and some don't. Mm-hmm. So it's not a monastic ordination. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah.
Why, if they're allowing women to become nuns and whatnot, why is there still like a difference in how many years they have to?
Okay. That's, yeah, and how many years they have to be ordained to give the ordination. Also in the number of precepts, the women have more precepts. Okay, in terms of the number of precepts, all of the precepts in the individual liberation category, the individual precepts, were made because different monastics were naughty. And they did things that were unbecoming for people on a spiritual path. Or they did things that were quite annoying to the lay people, and the lay people complained to the Buddha. Or other monastics complained to the Buddha. And so the Buddha made precepts that, you know, okay, my monastics won't do this and this and this. Okay? So the order of the monks was started before the order of nuns. So the nuns got most of the precepts that were made due to the monks' bad behavior, plus some other ones due to the nuns' bad behavior. But the monks only got their own. That's why they have less. Okay? Now, why in terms of having to wait longer and so on? In ancient Indian culture, there was this view that women were not as strong mentally or emotionally as men were. So you find in this thing some discrimination against women. Yeah, this is a big topic of discussion nowadays. And here at the Abbey, we're having none of it. I mean, we talk about it, but the discrimination we're not having. Okay. Yeah.
For those lineages that disappeared that are now talking about maybe ordaining women again, mm-hmm. have they got the ordination was it written down, or are you going to have to develop a brand new process?
Okay. Actually, in the traditions that have died out, because we only have three of the traditions left. So one has it, the other two don't. But in their written texts, they have all the precepts for the bhikshunis. And they also have an outline for an ordination ceremony in that. Yeah. And so, for example, in the Theravada tradition, they've begun reinstating the bhikshuni ordination, and so they've referred to the Theravada Vinaya and taken the ceremony out of there. You know, some of them have taken the ceremony out of there and do that. Initially, when they did it, to reinstate it in the Theravada, and I was at this. It was in 1998 in Bodh Gaya. There was one thing in 1996 in India with some Koreans, but we're not quite sure what happened at that ordination. But where it really got reinstated was in 1998. There was a Chinese master, Sun Yin, who gave the ordination. He was the male preceptor, and then there was a Bhikshuni preceptor in Bodh Gaya. And I was asked to be on the Bhikshuni Sangha that was giving the ordination at that time. And so some Sri Lankan nuns came, and some of their monks came as well and served with the ordaining Bhikshu Sangha. And so they received the Dharmaguptaka lineage of the Bhikshuni vows. But then the Theravada monks took them to Sarnath, another city, afterwards, and did the Bhikshuni ceremony alone with them to make it a Theravada lineage. And then when they went back to Sri Lanka, there was, of course, some controversy depending upon the people who didn't like that. But they've subsequently been giving the ordination, and they now have about 400 Bhikshunis in Sri Lanka. So that's how they did it. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so let's move on to the Bodhisattva vow. Okay, so on the basis of taking refuge and one of the individual liberation vows, okay, then people can take the Bodhisattva vow. Now, some people say you don't really have to have any of the individual liberation vows to take the Bodhisattva vow, but I think Lama Atisha said you did, and in any case, I think it's a very good idea, because if you can't stop those five, you're going to have a really hard time keeping the Bodhisattva vow. Okay? So the Bodhisattva vow in the Tibetan tradition, it was culled from various different Mahayana scriptures. Okay? So Nagarjuna found some individual precepts, you know, advice on how Bodhisattvas should behave, and a Sangha found some, and they both correlated their two, and then later those two got put together. So now in the Tibetan tradition, whether you're a lay person or a monastic, when you take the Bodhisattva vow, you have 18 root vows and 48 auxiliary, 18 root precepts and 48 auxiliary precepts. Now, the different vows of individual liberation, to break those precepts, you have to do something physically or verbally. Okay? So those precepts are easier to keep because you have to say something or do something. It's not just what you think. Of course, those precepts help get at what you're thinking, because if to stop doing those things physically and verbally, you're going to have to change your thought patterns and your emotional patterns. But the Bodhisattva vow is more difficult to keep because those can be broken sometimes just by the way you think, not necessarily by saying or doing anything. And the core of the individual precept individual liberation vows is to not harm others. The core of the bodhisattva vow is to not generate a self-centered attitude, which is the biggest impediment to being of benefit to others. Okay, so you can see, taking the bodhisattva vow, you've done some progression, because on our path, the first thing we have to do is stop creating the negative karma that harms ourselves and doing immediate actions that harm others. So that's the individual liberation vow. And then the bodhisattva vow is to eliminate the self-centered thought that not only harms others, but prevents us from attaining full enlightenment. Okay? So you have to have done some preliminary work so that your motivation has notched up, and then you take the bodhisattva vow. And the bodhisattva vows are really wonderful. The bodhisattva vow, I should say, has precepts in it that are really wonderful to keep, because they really make you much more aware of how the self-centered mind functions. Okay? The individual liberation precepts also make us aware of that and increase our mindfulness. And then when you take the bodhisattva, you get even more aware because it's more detailed. Okay? Okay, then the tantric vow is taken at the time of taking an initiation into either yoga tantra or highest yoga tantra class deities. Okay? And the tantric vows, their purpose is to eliminate the subtle dualistic way of viewing things and to enable us to have a pure view. And so those are even more difficult to keep because they depend more on the mind. You know, some of them depend on physical and verbal actions, but more than in the other two classes of vows, depend on what you're thinking and how you're viewing things. Okay? So there's a kind of progression there in which you take these different vows because it helps you. You know, taking the lower ones, you practice with that, you develop, then you can take the bodhisattva, then you know. And even within the eight liberation vows, you can see there's a progression from the lay person to the novice to the fully ordained. Okay? So it gives you a way of progressing, you know, in a very comfortable way when your mind is ready to. Now, the lay people's vows, you know, the upasaka and upasika, as well as the one-day vows, those can be taken just from one other individual. Yeah, the Shramanera-Shramanerika vows, you have to have two or three fully ordained people to give it. For the monastic, for the highest vow, the Bhikshu or Bhikshuni vows, the full vows, then you have to have, in a central country, 10 fully ordained men, for the Bhikshu vows. And for the Bhikshuni vows, 10 fully ordained men and 12 fully ordained women. Okay. In an outlying area, because the Buddha was realized, that's for a central area where there's many Buddhas, for an outlying area, then it's 5 fully ordained men and 6 fully ordained women. Okay. So America is kind of an outlying area right now. You know, we think we're the center of the world and the superpower, but not in terms of Dharma. We are an outlying area in a Dharma way, okay? The Bodhisattva vow, you first take from in the presence of a teacher who gives you the Bodhisattva vow. And then after that, you can take it in the presence of a Buddha image, or you can imagine the Buddha and take it. In fact, it's highly recommended if you've taken the Bodhisattva vow, to retake it again every morning and every evening of every day, because you can do that yourself. Then the tantric vow, you can retake it in another initiation, or you can do something called a self-initiation, which is a certain kind of ritual that you do after you've done a retreat. In terms of the fully ordained vows, you have to take those from a community, so you can't retake those yourself. Yeah. Now, any questions? Yeah.
Why would the person retake?
Because you've broken them.
Yeah.
The whole reason we take any of the sets of vows is because we can't keep the precepts perfectly. If we could keep any, these precepts perfectly, then we don't need to take the vow and make a determination not to do it, because that's already integrated in our behavior. Okay? So when you take any of these levels of different vows, you have to have enough confidence that you can keep them reasonably well, but you don't expect yourself to keep them 100% perfectly, because if you could, you wouldn't need them. Okay? So it's this middle kind of fuzzy ground where you have to have some confidence, and you also have to have the confidence that you don't break them from the root, because in terms of the monastic precepts, if you break them from the root, then you've lost your chance to reordain. You cannot retake the ordination at all. Okay? So the root precepts for the monastics are the celibacy precept, killing, in this case a human being, stealing here something of value that the government would get involved in, and lying about your spiritual attainment. And for the nuns, there's four others that are root. So you just have to avoid all of those, at minimum, because if you do that, then you've blown it. Okay? Yeah, and then you leave the community and you don't wear robes and so on. Okay, so you have to have enough confidence that you can do that. But then the other one, sometimes, in certain situations or depending upon what's going on, you can't keep them completely 100%. And also, you find that in the vows of individual liberation, because the Buddha made them, these vows, these precepts one by one, as different incidents came up, that some of these precepts correspond to general ethical principles like not stealing and lying and so on. But some of the more minor precepts have to do with etiquette. They have to do with things that applied to the culture of ancient India. Yeah. And so one of the things in now, when we have a modern day, is we can't keep some of those precepts exactly literally, because our society is constructed in a very different way. Now, there's some Buddhist schools, mostly within the Theravada branch, that try to keep them very, very literally. And that works for those people. Then for others of us, we try to understand the purpose behind each of the precepts and adapt that purpose to what we're doing now, even though we may not keep each and every precept literally because of the difference in time and culture. Okay? So, for example, I have a precept not to ride in a vehicle. Now, that would make life pretty difficult, wouldn't it? Yeah, I couldn't go anywhere to teach. I couldn't go into town for a doctor's appointment. It would be very difficult. The reason for this precept is because in ancient India, it was royalty who rode in vehicles. The vehicles were usually pulled by either human beings or animals who suffered. And if you rode in one, you were usually pretty arrogant. Yeah. Nowadays, riding in a car is no big deal. So the way I adapt that is I should be careful, and not just, if I have a choice, if different people give me a ride, choose the most comfortable car or the most expensive car to ride in, or go cruising around in town with somebody who's driving me because I have nothing else to do. Okay, so, or be arrogant because I'm, you know, riding in the front seat or something like this. Yeah, so that's how you would update that kind of thing. And here at the Abbey, what we've also done, because there are many things now that I'm sure if the Buddha were alive, he would have made monastic precepts to do with. But since these things didn't exist at his time, there's no precepts that have to do with internet use, cell phone use, iPod use, you know, driving and these kinds of things. So we have within the Abbey our own internal house guidelines of how we're going to relate to these, you know, all this technology. Yeah, kind of using the ideas that came from the Vinaya. Like, it was very strong in the Vinaya that the monastic should not watch entertainment. Okay, so, you know, not sitting in front of the TV, just watching shows, not going to the movies just to watch the movies, just not watching entertainment. If it's a documentary, if it's something educational, yes. But just going out to the movies to space out, watching something, no. Okay. Now, we can go on the internet and space out with a lot of entertainment, can't we? Yeah? And you can go to all sorts of different websites, some very naughty ones, in fact. Yeah? And so we have the rule here at the Abbey that, you know, the internet has to be used in a room where somebody else is in the room. Okay, or if you're the only one in the room, it's during offering service hours, and so other people are walking in and out of the room, even though they may not have to be there. Yeah, but no internet in our own individual rooms, no internet even in an office in the evening, when nobody else is around. So that's how we're trying to adapt the purpose of the initial precepts to our modern situation.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about the individual precepts mm-hmm. as a lay practitioner, mm-hmm. and that there is that fuzzy area as to when you know when you have broken a particular precept, mm-hmm. and then the value that where is it if there's even like a protocol for it of disclosure with mm-hmm. another Dharma friend or practitioner of that particular yeah. thing that you've done and. Mm-hmm. There's been several of us that are trying to set up a time to, as monastics do, as lay people, to mm-hmm. disclose like some of our things that we've mm-hmm. done.
Yeah.
Because it seems to have more. I can do the evening, Bhagavata regret, but there's something that I feel for myself as I'm more honest and owning up and stronger. Propensity, which would seem to be purifying, a lot stronger than just going, yeah, I'm sorry, is that. Or, you know, you get through the night.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess it's a question of, is there a way to set, and if you set that up, can we just do that?
Okay, so you're saying that even as a lay practitioner, you find that it's helpful, like the monastics, to disclose the individual transgressions, because it, you know, when you say it to somebody else, then it's like, okay, what's that person going to think of me? You know, if you visualize the Buddha, well, the Buddha's compassionate, and, you know. And anyway, maybe the Buddha's a little far away. We think, you know, actually the Buddha's here all the time, but we think, oh, the Buddha's far away. But when we say it to another person, then it's like, oh, I gotta say I did that. So then that makes us much more mindful because, you know, how often can we continue to say that we did the same naughty thing? Okay. Yeah. This is a actually maybe one positive use of ego is that we get so embarrassed saying it again and again to somebody that we figure we better stop doing it after a while. But maybe you can do it just a long time. But I think that's an excellent idea if as a lay practitioner you want to start doing something like that, what you could do is either tell your, you know, one of your spiritual teachers, or you could create a group of lay practitioners that meet together maybe twice a month or once a month or whatever, and disclose things to each other and then read your precepts again. Or if you feel better not waiting until you know, once a month or twice a month, because you might forget it in the meantime, then you can arrange with a friend that if there's, you know, something going on, that you would call them immediately or they would call you immediately. Yeah. So check around in this group. There might be other people who want to be your kind of precepts buddy. I'm seeing some hands go up of people who want to do that.
They have to be a phone call.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say, you say call someone. Uh-huh. Would doing it over the phone be the same as doing it face to face?
No, it's much.
It wouldn't feel the same.
It's much better to do it face to face, but in our society, sometimes you live a long ways away, and so the phone is as much as you can manage. Yeah. Okay. There's tremendous advantage from keeping the precepts because they make us much more mindful, much more careful and aware of our behavior. Yeah, and so they're a very good structure to help us really start working on ourselves and cleaning up our act. You know, in fact, I think if you put taking precepts in vernacular, it would come out as clean up your act. Yeah. Because that's what they have to do with, you know, all of our bad habits. Yeah. That not only are seen as bad habits in the world, but then also as you get into the Bodhisattva and Tantric vows, the bad habits that really create a lot of obstacles for us on the spiritual path. So, you know, one benefit is we just become so much more aware and careful and introspective and, you know, aware of what we're saying and doing and thinking and feeling. Okay, so that's very, very helpful for the kind of internal growth that we want to do. Then also taking the precepts helps us purify previously done harmful actions, because when we stop doing them now, you know, we're stopping that habit. And so, especially because one of the karmic results from doing negative actions is the tendency to do it again. So by taking the precept and stopping doing it again, you're impeding, you know, in some way purifying that previous negative karma from ripening. And then also, when you take and keep precepts, you create a great deal of positive energy or merit, you know, which acts as fertilizer on your mind stream that makes your mind kind of soft and receptive, so that when you hear the teachings, you can understand them, they make more sense, you can take them to heart easier. Yeah. And then also, the merit also has the result of producing happiness in future lives. Okay, and of course, clearing away all these obstacles for liberation and omniscience. So there's and then a big psychological thing about keeping our precepts well is we don't have so much guilt and we like ourselves more, you know, because we stop doing, you know, we start to get a handle on some of the actions we do that we don't feel so good about doing. So as we start to decrease those actions and then eventually abandon them, then our how we feel about ourselves, you know, our self-esteem and self-confidence increase. Okay? So many, many benefits from keeping precepts. So we shouldn't see precepts as kind of something being imposed from outside on us, but rather something that we look and we see the state of our mind, we see where we want to go, you know, spiritually, we have an understanding of what kind of tools are going to help us get there, and then seeing that taking any of these vows will help us get to where we want to go, then we voluntarily take them. Okay? And so in that way, we see our precepts as helping us not to do things that we don't want to do anyway. Okay? If you see your precepts as limiting you from doing things that you want to do, then you shouldn't take them. Because you don't have the right motivation and the right understanding. But, you know, we have to, through our own wisdom, see, you know, oh, I have these habits to do this stuff, and I really want to stop, and this is going to help me. Because we've already examined the situations with our own wisdom and seen, okay, when I do that, when I act out that bad habit, this is the effect, you know, and I'm tired of doing that. I'm tired of creating the cause for that kind of effect. Okay, so that's why I say that they're taken voluntarily and they help us not do things that we've already decided that we really don't want to do. And then another benefit of taking them is that when you find yourself in a situation where you would normally act on an old habit doing the same old thing, hopefully you remember you have the precept and you go, I don't need to get confused in this situation. I've already decided I'm not going to do it. Yeah? So I don't, you know, maybe my friends are saying, oh, come on, have a drink, or, you know, come, it's just a little white lie, say it for me, or, you know, you might have all sorts of peer pressure, but you think, I don't need to get confused, I've already thought about this, I don't want to do it, and I just tell my friend, no, I'm not doing it, that's it. You know, and I have full confidence in this because I've thought about it before and I've taken the precept. Yeah? It's very helpful to us in that way. Yeah. Okay, let's sit quietly for a few minutes and just think about what we've talked about, what you've heard, so that you can implement it in your life.